Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
Hello, folks, and thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic, Political Talk, part of the Growing Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find us at the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com, and also check out the website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And, of course, check out the pages, including our featured guests page, which has a list of the different guests we've had on, including featuring two of our special guests, as well as our Give page, in which has some wonderful organizations that can need and appreciate your help. And, of course, the Contact page, in which you can contact me, the host, with any shows or guests that you would like to see on Bard's Logic Political Talk. And then, of course, our sponsor and affiliate page, such as the Gun Go Sun Stove, which is a solar cooking stove. And the Go Sun Stove is a viable solution to overcome food and clean water needs in any remote off-grid situation. From the backyard to the back of beyond, the Go Sun Stove will passively work its magic whenever the sun is shining. Water can be heated and hot meals can be prepared with a little patience, even on the coldest winter day. It works by a vacuum between two layers of tough glass, preventing the outside ambient temperature from transferring into the inner cooking zone. And you can also see more about it on a video on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, as well as looking for another one of our affiliates, which is the Green Cycler Composter, which the 2014 Old Farmer's Almanac says this little machine was the solution to my composting nightmare. And also, if you're familiar with HGTV, Garden says the Green Cycler isn't just a bin, it is a self-contained food scrap recycler. And tonight, our guest is going to be the candidate running for Senate for the Libertarian Party, and that is Robert Sarvis, will be our guest tonight. And while we're waiting for him, we'll tell a little bit about our topic and also about our guest. And tonight we'll be discussing, is America becoming more libertarian, and what does this mean for Republicans? And, of course, we'll have our guests tonight and panelists, such as Dan Gray, and we're also looking to have on with us the founder of Overpasses for America, and that is James Neighbors, and we'll be talking also about something he's got going on this weekend and our special show that we'll be doing this Saturday afternoon at noon Eastern Time. So we're looking forward to that. So tonight we'll discuss the changes in America's economic and social culture. Republicans are seen as more fiscally conservative, while Democrats more socially tolerant. And we'll ask, are the libertarians an amalgamation of both, and is this where America is beginning to lean? We'll also discuss with Mr. Sarvis' campaign and a stance on some issues important to conservatives and the grassroots. A little bit about our guest is he has degrees in mathematics from Harvard University and the University of Cambridge, JD from New York University School of Law, and a master's in economics from George Mason University. While attending law school, he was the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the NYU Journal of Law and Liberty. He also clerked for Judge E. Grady Jolly on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. He has a diverse professional background with experience as an entrepreneur and small business owner, a software engineer being named by Google as a grand prize winner for their Android Development Challenge, and mobile app developer, teacher, and, of course, as mentioned earlier, a lawyer. In 2011, he ran for Virginia State as a Republican, alluding to the Democratic Sasslaw. After the election, Sarvis switched to the Libertarian Party, and he was the Libertarian Party of Virginia's nominee for governor of Virginia in 2013 election, finishing third behind Democrat Terry McAuliffe and Republican Ken Cuccinelli, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But it appears our guest is on the line, so I will open up this mic. Thank you very much. This is Sarvis coming to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Great, great. And I spoke with Joe and Roddy. We've got about a half an hour or so to have you on, so we'll just get straight into the questions we have here. We also have two of our panelists on, and we'll be bringing them on shortly as well. We have Dan Gray, and also we have, who's also a contributor here on the show, and we also have our resident libertarian on the line as well, and that is also our constitutional scholar, Kelly Mordecai. And so the first question I brought up, in 2011 you ran as a Republican for the state Senate. However, you left the party in favor of the Libertarian Party, saying that you realize the Republican Party, at least in Virginia, in the current era, is not a good vehicle for liberty candidates. Republicans are very strident on personal issues. When they talk about liberty, they don't mean any personal issues. This is very little respect for personal autonomy. And could you give us a little more elaboration on that quote? And by giving us some examples?
Well, sure. I mean, so if you look at the way that Republicans talk about things like marijuana use or the, you know, the changes in social institutions like marriage, and they're, you know, using the Constitution, the state Constitution, to try and freeze the institution in place, even as the social institution is changing, and all sorts of areas where, I'm a little distracted by my son who's supposed to be asleep, but he disappeared.
I completely understand my daughter does that too sometimes.
Right, and then you know, using, you know, so the abortion issue is an issue where I think it's not. You know, libertarians can disagree and people can disagree, but I think that there was a kind of a narrow-mindedness with regard to, you know, misusing the law to do an end run around the direct issue, regulating abortion clinics out of existence, and then on, you know, there's some other issues as well, surveillance and civil liberties, police militarization, things like that, where the Republicans are just out for lunch on.
Can you repeat that last part? I missed that last sentence.
Well, the Republicans are just out to lunch on. They don't
okay.
Really take liberty. You know, their first kind of their default rule is not the absence of state power. It's you know, you're free to do what we think you should be able to be free to do.
Okay, and that's definitely some of the you know, things we can, you know, stand do a little more elaboration on. You mentioned the abortion issue, and we also want to talk a little bit tonight about immigration as well. Well, when we get the chance, and we'll soon we'll bring in our panelists. And so, and then hopefully we'll have some time. There is something specifically in Virginia I wanted to ask you about, but we'll do that later if we have time. Of course, this issue is very important, and of course it's been in the media a lot about illegal immigration. And a couple of questions. Do you agree with the way the Obama administration is handling the influx of illegals, especially in regards to the minors that have been coming in recently? And your website states that you would like to reform our laws to welcome immigrants of all backgrounds, which I'd like to get more elaboration on that. So that's a little ambiguous, so give us some time on that.
Sure. Well, so first of all, I mean, I don't really think the Obama administration does have any sort of intelligible policy. I think it was a calculation to kind of, that it would embarrass the Republicans. I think it's just embarrassing everybody. It's a bad situation, and it's entirely the fault of both Republicans and Democrats. The problem is that the underlying law is such that we're limiting who can come into the country. We're allowing far too few people into the country. And every, you know, 30 or so years, every generation, we have this talk about amnesty. And when you start talking about that, then there's a deadline for that, and that creates an incentive for people to get their to get across the border, to get, in this case, their kids across the border. And it's the worst of all worlds. So, you know, if we had a rational policy, if we went to the fundamental problem, which is our basic immigration laws, you would not have these perverse incentives. You would actually have the ability of families to come to the U.S. if they want to come here and live peacefully and contribute to the society and the economy. But they could plan their trip in such a way that it's safer, it's more regular, and, you know, save up money and all this stuff instead of kind of just sending kids across the border.
Okay, we'll just run through some of these, and hopefully later in our discussion we can have more talk more about it. But I do want to run through some other questions, because I do have a list of them. I do want to bring Dan in the short time that we got. Now, you know, what I do research, as you know, when candidates will look at their website, look at news, things of that nature, and bringing in with the theme of tonight, our discussion, and about is America becoming more libertarian, and what this means for Republicans. And you hear all the time that the Republican Party, or at least the leadership, and I'm sure you've heard this quote, is just run by a bunch of old white guys, which may or may not speak of the truth of the matter. And as looking at your website, it states and points out, and here's a quote that it says, Robert Sarvis best represents the increasingly diverse population of Virginia. He is a mixed-race, half-Chinese, and in a mixed-race marriage. Now, in a culture and a political environment where race is not supposed to matter, why do you think it's important to point this out beyond the diversity issue? And would you contain, this is one of the tougher questions I was telling you about, but would you contend that race affects the one one governs or legislates?
I think it's certainly, I don't think one should vote for somebody simply because of the color of their skin or because of their gender or something like that. But certainly different people have different backgrounds and experience a different, people respond to people differently. And so certainly it's the case that as a descriptive matter, yes, the GOP is generally speaking old white males. Is that a good or bad thing? Well, it seems to be that the GOP is stuck in a mindset with regard to the government that is fast becoming obsolete. And so it's not so much that we need non-white, non-male younger people. It's just that we need people who have a different mindset that's more representative of the changing society. And that just so happens to be it's just going to have more of a diverse set of people who are in that set of people. So I think people would like to see that politics is changing. Oftentimes politics is the trailing edge of change, and it's not supposed to be that way. It's not supposed to be that politicians are kind of in there for life. It's not supposed to be that it's unresponsive to the people. It's not supposed to be something where, political power is used to perpetuate political advantage. That's exactly what's happening with the Democrats and Republicans keeping me out of debates. That's what the high bars to getting on the ballot are all about. That's what the ballot order which privileges Republicans and Democrats over third-party candidates is all about. You know, we can go on and on.
Right. No, certainly, and we do have a lot, as you know, a lot of alternative parties. You know, on the show, we've had many libertarians on, constitution parties. We even had some Green Party folks on here. But without any further ado, though, I'm going to go ahead and bring in to the kind of, you know, shotgunning this up, Dan. And so, Dan, thank you very much for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks, Rob. And I appreciate Mr. Sarvis coming on this evening. Given the short duration of Mr. Sarvis's planned stay, because I know you have other interviews you have to do this evening, I'll make it as brief as possible. So rather than asking a bunch of questions, I'll comment on two of the subjects that you've mentioned and then ask one major question. And first of all, I want to preface this by saying I absolutely agree with you that both parties are just two sides of the same coin. You and others should have ballot access and should be included in debates. Whether we agree or don't agree has nothing to do with it. How are people to make an informed choice if they don't know? Now, you mentioned immigration, taking this in reverse order, and said that the U.S. is limiting far too many people from coming to the United States, which, you know, we have 92 million working-age workers out of the workforce right now. Unemployment, I work in the unemployment office, is at least four times higher than official numbers, or more in certain areas and demographics. So I can't agree on that. As far as abortion, you mentioned...
Well, can we stop there and talk about that?
No, sir. Comment any way you want. I just, knowing your time is brief, I wanted to make these comments and ask one major question.
okay.
So if you don't mind...
All the time.
Well, I'll make it quick. For abortion, you said that the Republican Party was abusing the law and doing an end run around the direct issue. I think both parties are. If the libertarian view is that a person's rights only stop where another person's begin, I can't agree, because a woman's decision to end the pregnancy does not void a child's right to live. So that being said, and you can comment any way you want, I do have one major question. Just today, I found out that a man in our Pennsylvania, that's where I'm from, militia movement, who's trusted by many, is asking some to break gun laws and commit federal crimes doing straw purchases. The implication, and it's unconfirmed at this point, is that he got in some kind of trouble with the feds and is trying to clear his name by acting as an agent. I'm not mentioning his name because I haven't gotten confirmation on this, but everything fits. Now, given the background and actions of people in the liberty movement, and it's not just people like that, it's not just people like Rand Paul, whose attitudes are certainly questionable, or, what the heck's the fellow's name, Ryan, who ran with as Romney's vice president, or Ted Cruz. You yourself have a background that is mixed. You went to Harvard, which is a bastion of progressive thought, and Cambridge, and Berkeley, and NYU. But then again, you were part of the Federalist Society and the Mercatus Institute and the Libertarian. Did you cross Cuccinelli, perhaps? Were you funded by Democrats? It seems unlikely. Did you help future libertarians? Certainly. But what way can folks who follow what's going on determine who's worthy of following, who is actually true to Constitution and liberty, and who is merely in it for themselves or perhaps even a plant? Because in 2010, we did elect an officer who were not supposed to be go-along, get-along cronies, only to find out that quite a few of them really are. So that's really the main thing. Why do we want to trust you or anybody else who's putting themselves forward?
Well, you know, people, one of the things about the Libertarian Party is nobody does this for glory. I mean, you know, we oftentimes get very little percentage of the vote, and just one of the reasons we try so hard is because we face a lot of obstacles, but we're in it because we are passionate about the ideas. You know, I recommend everybody who is interested in my campaign come out to a campaign event. I don't know, I have very few people who actually came to the events to listen to me and engage with me, ask me tough questions, had any problem with me. You know, the people who engage with me, I think, were very impressed with my answers, even if they didn't agree with me. They know everything's well thought out. They understand that I understand the issues deeply. So you have to engage with people. And generally speaking, people in the Libertarian Party who are running for office, who are trying to solve our political problems, are more than happy to take time out of their lives to talk to anybody who's willing to listen. That's certainly the case with me, certainly the case with all the candidates I've ever met who have run. And, you know, I've been traveling the state. You know, last year I put 20,000 miles in my van. This year I hope to do the same. I will be out in every corner of the state. So if people in Virginia are worried about what I believe in, please come out and talk to me. Floyd Bain did that last year at a Chesterfield sign wave. He didn't come to wave my sign. He came to ask me some questions. I think he liked the answers. I think he recognized I was sincere, and I truly did believe in limited government, and he came away a supporter.
Very good. What about that abortion issue before we bring Kelly on? Does a woman's right to have a decision on how her body handles a pregnancy void a child's right to basic life, to be deprived without due process, without even accusation of a crime?
So, you know, the first thing I said when I brought that up is that libertarians can disagree on that issue. It's not so much that a woman's right to bodily integrity voids the baby's right to life. It's a difficult question, and we disagree on a fundamental level, not you and I necessarily, but, you know, Americans, Virginians. We disagree at a very fundamental
what's
level.
What's your view?
Sorry?
What's your view?
I'm anti. I don't like abortion at all.
Okay.
But the point is, you know, we can't even agree on the metaphysical the question that's antecedent to the political question. There's no way we're going to get there. So in the absence of some level of agreement, I just think that there should be no law. That's my view on any issue. If we can't really agree on something at a fairly high level of agreement, there should be no law.
Well, that's a very refreshing point of view.
And I got a question. I got a message from Kelly. Is he's listening in, and he'll be able to chime in when he can. Hopefully, he'll be able to come in with some questions as our resident libertarian panelist. But we'll see if we'll be able to do that. But I do have someone from chat asking a question, and I think very much CA Living has a question. So in a perfect, I believe this was to you, Dan. It says, in a perfect world, your concept would be nice. Although, who would pay for their life here in America for how long? What about those that are pregnant or those who are criminals or those with CDC issues?
Well, that's very good questions. And there's a fundamental problem with the question itself, which is it attempts to solve the problem by looking at details. The devil is in the details, but before you try to solve any problem, before I try to solve any problem, I figure out, if at all possible, what is the basic underlying issue and where do I stand on it. Once that's clear, then there are issues to solve. We had a candidate on recently who had mentioned Ken Krawchuk, who is a libertarian candidate for governor here in Pennsylvania, that he favors early adoption. In other words, you can adopt a baby in the womb. And the technology is not quite there yet where you could actually remove a baby before the woman's body is even disfigured by pregnancy in any way, no stretch marks, no growing, no you know, physical changes, and transplant it into another woman's womb who wants to have the baby. That's not there yet. But he said, and this makes sense, that it would be an incredibly resource-efficient manner in terms of money and time and effort and pain and suffering, too, to adopt the unwanted baby while it's still in the womb. And then once the baby is born, however the baby is born, and it's adopted by the couple who has already paid for this procedure, just as they would with their own, and you have a baby who is in a loving home where they're supported and they're taken care of and they're educated, because the cost of unwanted children, the left, they're not really left, the progressives are right. The cost of unwanted children, the cost of children who are raised in really haphazard, dangerous, violent, broken families is very high. Some kids turn out great, but it's very, very much an uphill battle when they don't have two loving parents and a stable home life. They're prey to all kinds of forces of poverty and malnutrition and drugs and gangs and all kinds of other things, and they end up costing society a huge amount of money, which is not calculated into that. But I'm tired of a moral relativism that says that it could be right, it could not be right, both sides could be right. In my view, some things are right, some things are not, and the question is, do you know enough to make an informed choice? I've used an example before, which I'm not going to belabor.
Hold on, Dan. Let's go back to that example later when we get into the discussion portion,
please.
Because I want to be able to spend more time on the topic with our guest. And Calvin, you made the comment, wow, what a way to track my question. So CA Living, you are more than welcome to call into the show at 347-945-7428, and you'd be welcome to come in and have that discussion with us here on the show, which we have plenty of time to do that. But first, I'm going to bring it back to our guest here, Mr. Sarvis. And so with tonight's topic, do you see that the Libertarian Party eventually, and of course this could be, you know, maybe even a generation or so, replacing the Republican Party, or do you see America becoming more of a multi-party system such as that of Ireland?
It's hard to say. I mean, the voting system that we have is kind of designed. It's the result of it is generally a two-party system. So it's incredibly hard to displace one of the major parties. I would like to see it, yes, displace one of the major parties. I quite frankly don't care which one it is. One of the things I fear is that if it gets too much success, then the people flooding the party to glom onto that success will destroy the what makes the party so great. But also, if we have the effect of making the other two parties much more libertarian, that's a success too. I just want to see our policy, both economic and social policies, become better, allow for more freedom, get cronyism out of the system, return us to where businesses have an even playing field, where you can't basically buy regulations that keep, startups out. And so just across the board, we have so far to go. Both of the two parties are up to their eyeballs in money from special interests that are expecting stuff after they get elected. So, one of the reasons why I'm running is because I don't know what can be done. I know that, I was frustrated with the Republican Party's, when I ran, I fairly quickly found out how conservative, socially conservative, the party was, even in Northern Virginia, which is why it's so small up here, but it was also not very serious about economic freedom. And, the Virginia GOP is as much as bad as the Democrats when it comes to, misregulation and just economically unsound policies. So, I'm doing this because I don't know what the answer is. And that's kind of how we, in the business world and the political world, you have to try stuff and give voters options, and maybe they'll like what you have to sell.
Okay, and I do see that Kelly is ready to join us, so I'm going to go ahead and open up his mic. Thank you very much, Kelly, for coming to the show. How are you?
Hey, good. I'm really glad to join you, but that begs the question, are you falling apart?
I'm sorry?
No.
Okay, I joke around a lot. That's just kind of like, that's because I come from a long line of Jewish hog farming.
To join us. Okay, fine. Okay, I'll be frank, folks, and I am on vacation, and I have been vacationing this week. And while it's fun, it takes a lot of energy out of me. So I missed that one. But yeah, am I falling apart because you're joining us? I get it.
Okay.
It took me a second there. So go ahead, Shelly. My choice.
Well, I'm glad that Tarvis is joining us here tonight. And, there was a big controversy I remembered about you running for governor, and then the Republicans were like, oh, you libertarians, you caused us to lose to the Democrats. Actually, You know, you even see all sorts of different stories and spins when you do a Google search on the Internet. But what happens here is you look at the other side of the story, which, of course, would be the libertarian. I get a nice national newsletter that said basically, had you not run, the Republicans would have gotten creamed. So they say, well, libertarians are drawing votes from Democrats and Republicans, mostly from the Republicans. No. The newsletter stated that basically the national LP was spending money on attracting the Hispanic votes that would have gone Democrat. So the Libertarian Party pulled numbers from the Democrats, and again, the Republican would have lost a lot more had you not run. So what's your take on that scenario?
I think it's probably the case that I didn't have too much of an influence because a lot of my voters wouldn't have voted. I do think that, I think the exit polls make it pretty clear that if I did have an effect, it was to draw a little bit more from McAuliffe than Cuccinelli. I think the exit polls either explicitly said that or it was pretty clear. I mean, the 15% from 18 to 29-year-old voters, those aren't people who are clamoring to vote for Cuccinelli. I think that if you look at the other two races, I mean, I wasn't in the other two races, and one guy lost by like 100 votes or whatever it was, and the other guy lost by 10 percentage points. So I think it's an exercise that's just not worth getting too worked up about. But I certainly think it's hard to say that I cost Cuccinelli the election. I think that's preposterous.
Well, that's what the LP logically makes sense. There's three sides to this, the Republican, the Libertarian, and, of course, the Democratic side. But, you know, the reality is third parties are coming up. They've had enough of the R&D games. Yesterday on RT, which, by the way, RT is viewership is, 600 million worldwide. RT had a Libertarian candidate from Virginia. When I talked with him, it was quite interesting. Are you familiar with that guy?
Jeffrey Carson, yes.
Carson, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, it was really interesting. I'm like, wow, RT is really... Finally, somebody is interviewing a third-party candidate. Isn't it interesting? Media doesn't interview any other party but the R's and the D's or the donkeys and the elephants. So, anyway, I kind of tread... or Mr. Sarvis... I tread on sometimes thin ice because we got recovering republics amongst us. anyway, but the connection which we have amongst each other is greater than parties, which is the Constitution.
Uh-huh.
Chris, they accuse me. They keep accusing me of all sorts of things, but one of them is being a constitutional scholar, which I do study the Constitution. Were you aware that the Constitution, the way it was set up, that the states were the ones that manage immigration?
There's actually, for all the people who are anti-immigration and who are constitutional conservatives, yes, there's no enumerated power that would appear to give the federal government power to keep people out of the country. That's correct.
Right. So what's happened here is two little, heading. When you got a little section heading, you know, in a book, a textbook, a Bible, whatever, Constitution, you have a heading that appeared national immigration, which, wait a minute, whoa. That was not written in the original Constitution. The context throughout that heading is that the states, and this is how it was done for decades, or even more than a century, somebody wanted to move this country, they'd find a sponsor in a state. They'd pick a state, whatever. They'd get the sponsor. They'd move up. They would prove themselves for 5 years to their sponsor, and the sponsor would say yes or no. Hey, yeah, this guy's great. You know, he loves his family. Got a good job. He's learning. He seems to really like our country. You got to let him in. Oh, this guy? Sorry, I sponsored him, but I'm so embarrassed. Like, yeah, he like steals from the neighbor, everybody hates him, let's get him out of the country. And so they would go to the State Department of Immigration and say, this guy out, this guy in. And so what we had was, you know, the best coming to our countries, and the American people would bet yes or no. And that's how the founders set it up exactly. And so, of course, the federalization of our country has caused the feds are taking care of it. Really? Well, Michigan has passed a law establishing a Michigan Department of Immigration. Florida's working on it, too. So that's really, you know, some will say, and there's one thing I get frustrated with libertarians. Oh, you know, we shouldn't have open borders. Really? Are you freaking mine? You know, every Tom, Dick, and Harry and every blood-murdering thief come into our country? I don't think so. You know, we do have a choice. We have a door on our house. We open to friends. We close to enemies. So, you know, the founders had it figured out. And so obviously I kind of looked at your bio a little bit. You studied law. People accuse me of being an attorney sometimes, and I say, no, I'm honest. all right, somebody got my joke. All right, so anyway, I like what you're doing here. And you know, you're saying, you know, it's the younger people who are starting to figure this out, that the R's and D's don't work. What's kind of your rapport with some of the younger in your present campaign?
Well, it's summertime, so I haven't had a chance to do a campus tour yet. I'll plan on doing that in the fall. But, you know, last year I had a great response. As I said, the 18- to 29-year-old vote was very strong. I have a lot of people who are excited about my campaign this year. And, yeah, it's just generally a lot of these issues that are kind of wedge issues between the Republicans and Democrats, the young people just don't understand why it's a big deal, and it's not that they're becoming more Democrats, because they're just becoming less Republican. They still like fiscal responsibility. They just want us more open-minded, open society, and so it's a real opportunity for libertarians, but it's also a real opportunity for the powers that be and of the other two parties to actually change. And you know, it's sometimes hard to change your image, but it can happen very quickly, and it is kind of, you have to show that you're serious about it. And the way you show you're serious about it is you run candidates who are willing to embrace the ideals of an open society, of freedom, economic and personal liberty, and young people are just so not interested in being loyal or tied to a party, and so they're much more open-minded, willing to vote third party, willing to spend their time. I mean, the one thing they have, they might not have money, they might not have, you know, this or that, but they do have passion and they do have time, and they're willing to work hard for what they believe in. And so, you know, if you can capture that enthusiasm, it's you know, anything can happen.
Well, yeah, you know, one thing I observed about libertarians, I know I went to the 2012 National, I went to 2013 California, 2014 California, they decided to send me off to National as a delegate. Then they threw me on some committee that I don't even know what's going on. That's another story, but I didn't ask for it. They just threw me on it. All right, so anyway, one of the things that I see that's really frustrating about libertarians to me, okay, I used to be a Republican. I used to be a repugnant one. I'm sorry, I mean a Republican. All right, so anyway, I get frustrated because, look, if we're libertarian, we love the Constitution and liberty, we got to figure out a way to get people into our party. If we're just going to have this nice little social club and go home, what's the point? I mean, you know, I want to see results, of course. And obviously you had a really good turnout, you know, in the gubernatorial. But I want to see results. Okay, so here's the thing that hurts our results, okay? You've got, let's just say the left, all right? The Democrats are like, oh, wow, I like libertarian ideas. What? You like the Second Amendment? I'm out of here. That happens on occasion. Then you have the Republicans who are like, oh, you guys love the Second Amendment? You don't like welfare? You love the Constitution? Yeah, hooray! What? Marriage equality? So we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, okay? Mm-hmm. I want to throw this perspective out to you, and I wanted to see what you think. Okay? Why don't we, since you're running for United States Senate, why don't we let the states
decide the social issues. Federal government hands off. What's your thoughts on that one?
I'm generally 100% on board with that. The federal government shouldn't be involved in the vast majority of the wedge issues that are being used. I'm happy to say that is the first section of an answer with regard to a lot of those issues. But the fact of the matter also is that we do have marriage that permeates a lot of our federal laws. So yes, I would rather have marriage entirely out. But since it is in there, then we do have some thorny questions about what the federal government's going to recognize. So you just still actually have to have that second half of your answer is like, well, if it is going to be this way, then what do you do? But in the first instance, yes, I totally agree with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, my point is, look, social issues do not belong in the hands of the federal government. Once you open that door, you've opened the federal government to infinite growth, because there are endless personal choices, social moral choices we have in our own lives. Should the federal government be dictating? I live 3,000 plus miles away from D.C., so why should the federal government be dictating my everyday decisions in my personal life? But that's where it's going, because we open the door because of social issues. I'm firmly believing that, and I'm a Christian, some Christians don't like this, I don't care, but I believe the federal government has no business. Look, the Founding Fathers didn't put the Bible into the Constitution, okay? There were a lot of pastors and preachers and blah, 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 God-fearing men. Where is the Ten Commandments in the Constitution? Not there, because they believe the states. I'm not preaching at you. I'm preaching at some of my friends, kind of teasing them, because I've mentioned this before. It's like, look, let's get the social issues, if it has to be, in any kind of government context, in the hands of the state. That's what's really important here.
I wouldn't limit it to social issues, though.
Go ahead, Robert.
Oh, I was just going to say, I wouldn't limit that commentary to social issues. I mean, it's true also of economic issues, that as soon as you're taking money from some people and giving it to others, you see this with healthcare, obviously, right now, then there's a huge question of, oh, well, if you're getting money from us for your healthcare, we get to tell you how to live your life so that you aren't wasting our money on your healthcare. It's not fair to blame this on social issues. I think it's just overweening government power, government trying to do too much, people who are trying to control everybody's lives. That's the reason they like using the federal government, because if there's competition among the states for good policy, and people can vote with their feet, then that doesn't work out well for the people who want particular policies that generally are disliked.
Well, yeah, I agree. I totally agree in local control, but I've been blabbing too much. So go ahead, Robert.
Question, real quick, Kelly. We'll bring that more up in the discussion. But speaking of local control, I do have a question that's specific to Virginia. I want to get this in before we bring in Dan. But in Pittsfield County, there's 119 million ton uranium deposits in a place called Coal Hills. Now, do you support the uranium mining over there? If so, why or why not?
Did you say uranium or coal mining?
Uranium. This is uranium mining. There's 119 million pounds here of uranium in Coles Hills in Pittsfield County, Virginia. And, of course, there's a lot of debate on whether it should be mined or not, since you're running for Virginia. Well, what do you support? Do you support the uranium mining there or anywhere else for that matter, and why not?
Generally, I was kind of open-minded about it. I hadn't had my mind made up. I did think that we should go ahead and draft regulations that ensure that, the problem with uranium mining is that an accident can create a huge amount of harms that no company could be able to
foot the liability for. So, you know, try and figure out, you know, what kind of insurance or regulations are needed. You know, so there's kind of a fight over should we start writing these things now or just fight over whether to legalize it. And that was itself a kind of a strange debate. I didn't, you know, because the vote to legalize it, whether or not that takes place, you're going to have to write the regulations. So I think we should have gone ahead and at least done that. But, my default is that people should be able to use their property how they want, except when they can cause harms that they can't, pay liability for. And that's, and uranium is arguably something where that's the case. I don't know. I don't know that has to, that has to be the case. I mean, there are plenty of places around the world where it's done in a safe manner. So my kind of default is that it should be allowed, but, it's not an issue that, I was going to put my heart and soul behind without knowing more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. I just, some research there. I've seen that was an issue. And one of the issues that's near and dear to my heart is the environment. So I do ask those types of questions. But I do want to bring Dan on. I know you have to go soon, Mr. Starvis, and we appreciate all the time that you did spend with us this evening, and hopefully we can have you back on the show as the campaigns for 2014 progress. So go ahead, Dan. You have the floor.
Well, I'm hoping Mr. Starvis might have time for one more question. Just very briefly, uranium mining is not largely harmful. Very, very low-grade ore, minimal background radiation. It's enriching the ore that is dangerous, and that is something that needs to be very carefully regulated and controlled because it does present a danger to the environment. And as far as marriage, which we've been talking about, the federal constitution does require reciprocal respect between states. Of course, that hasn't been applied to gun laws, though. The question I have for you, if you have time, sir, and if not, then I guess we'll have to discuss it among ourselves. Laws, in a libertarian view, in anyone's view, are coercion. They pick winners and losers. Instead of what you would pass as a senator, what laws would you repeal?
Oh, a lot.
A lot. That's good.
For one thing, I think that a lot of the devil is in the regulatory details, and so I think kind of getting rid of a lot of legislative delegation and allowing the administrative agencies to pass laws that govern our lives, and in some cases essentially tax us, I think getting that power back into Congress is a huge win. So that's, you know, just there are a lot of enabling statutes essentially that would be great to repeal, or at least ensure that all regulations, before they become binding on the people, have to pass through the people's representatives, i.e. Congress. And then beyond that, I mean, there are a lot of issues that just shouldn't be within the federal government's purview. So, this is kind of, I always try and tell people, like, this is a libertarian getting what he wants is not what we're about right now. It's about kind of representing a electorate that is not particularly libertarian. I mean, they have libertarian leanings. They want a government that is more libertarian than it currently is, but it's not a libertarian ideological electorate. And so I want to represent the people that I'm trying to represent my state as well as I can. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to try and ram through a libertarian program, and I'm, you know, joining a Senate of 100 members, it's hard to just kind of, it's always fun to talk about things that you think the federal government shouldn't be doing, but if that's the only thing you're thinking about so much, then you end up, you can do more harm than good when you're not willing to at least move the needle in the right direction, even if it's not the ideal that you aspire to.
Well, sir, that's a a political response, and it was extremely well-reasoned and didn't answer very much, except for the first part, which I completely think is revolutionary, and people really should pay attention to it, which is that the procedural changes to restore congressional oversight and remove to strip power from all these appointed agencies, which would include the Federal Reserve, by the way, and all these bureaucrats in the administration who simply are given the power to write regulations that have the force of law and have criminal penalties even, that is a basic change. And I would urge you to come up with policy statements that are more specific. There are things that may be less important, and I'm not in favor at this point because things are that far gone of tweaking around the edges and compromising on little things to try and move that needle. By the time you move that needle, the grand momentum of the ship of state will have us fully ground against the rocks. We're almost there now. But there are some things that the federal government is doing that you have to agree, and maybe I'm not going to mention, maybe you don't have to agree, but that you have to say that they've done too much, they've gone too far. For me, I would abolish the Department of Education right off the bat. And even though you're one of 100, one of 100, sir, one of 100 is a bully pulpit. That's
I understand that.
Assuming,
I understand that.
Yeah, that's a major, major world stage, not just an American stage, for making a platform and getting people on record. If you said, for instance, and you may or may not agree with this particular one, but that we were going to get rid of the federal Department of Education completely, have the federal government have nothing to do with the way your child is educated in any way whatsoever, everyone would have to decide whether they were going to support that as an amendment or a standalone law, whether they were going to co-sponsor it, whether they were going to vote for it or against it, and that would enable the rest of us to decide whether we wanted to keep those people in office. Sir?
Is that a question?
No, just back and forth.
No. I agree. I don't think my answer was overly political. I was not saying that to avoid the question. I actually answered, and in one, as you noted, in one answer, with regard to administrative rulemaking, I said more that would change the level of government in our lives than probably the vast majority of your guests on the show when they rattle off, you know, two dozen laws that they would repeal. With one basic principle, I said more than they did by rattling off so many things. But the reason I say that is because I have to be honest with people about how my approach to government is, and it's not my way or the highway. And you know, I'm fairly clear. I make it clear about where I think the ideal is. You know, my website last year talked about pretty much getting the government entirely out, the federal government, out of divvying up healthcare spending, getting the federal government substantially out of healthcare entirely, and deregulating. I talked about ways at both the state and federal level of doing that. You know,
that is
specific. Important.
That is specific, and that's something that people can agree with or not, and you can give arguments, reasoned arguments, because everything you've said has you know, the force of logic behind it, whether we agree or not. I approve of you. You're taking a stand.
Well, thank you. That's great.
Looks like, unfortunately, we lost Kelly. Hopefully, he'll be able to call in later. But we do have some folks I know are listening in there, so if they want to join our roundtable discussion, you can give us a call at 347-945-7428. You're more than welcome to do so. But I do see it's been a quick show so far. We've already almost at the top of the first hour, and so I just want to give you, Mr. Sarvis, the opportunity for any other comments you'd like to go, you know, you'd like to say before you have to go, or, you know, you, of course, you're welcome to stay longer if you can, but from my understanding, you have other places that you need to go. I don't know exactly when, but, you know, if only
I should get going, but I do appreciate you having me on. I think this is a really important time for America and Virginia as well. Virginia is undergoing incredible changes, both demographic
and economic, and there's so many different regions, and they experience economic difficulties totally differently, and in some regions not at all, because government is never, you know, it's the recession-proof industry in some sense. So it's a really critical juncture for the state and country, and I think that it's really important for people to recognize that elections are how we determine, reward and punish legislators for the decisions they make and the parties for the positions that they put forward. And if you're upset about both the Republicans and Democrats, you have to ask yourself, why do we keep sending Republicans and Democrats back? Is it going to change anything to send Mark Warner back to Washington? Is it going to change anything to replace him with a Republican? I think it's very clear that it will change nothing, that it will change nothing. And so this is the opportunity to say, enough is enough. I'm going to take a chance on a third party. Here in Virginia, we have 7 awesome House candidates out of 11 congressional districts. So, you know, 7/11 of the state have an opportunity to vote for 2 Libertarians, not just one. And it's the only way to fire a shot heard around the world. I think that, you know, if you thought the Bratt victory over Eric Cantor was big, imagine what happens when you send a Libertarian to Congress. So with that, I'll say good night. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Sarvis.
Thank you very much
for
spending the time with us. And, we definitely want to keep posted on your campaign.
Okay. Well, we'll keep you posted.
All right. Well, take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
We'll see you again. Thank you.
Robert,
go ahead.
Because he didn't have time to self-promote enough, I guess. If you have a website for our listeners to be able to look at Mr. Sarvis's information, that might be a helpful link for them.
Certainly, yeah, and he's already had to go, but definitely. It's www.robertsarvis.com.
That's Sarvis. Whether you agree or disagree, folks, you have a choice to make in Virginia, and it's a big choice. 6 years of Senate term at a time when this country is in real dire need of new faces. This man may or may not be the new face you want, but if you don't know who he is, how are you going to make an informed choice?
Definitely, and that's something we really support and advocate here on the show, is people to look at all the different candidates, not just the Republicans and Democrats, and definitely vote your conscience. That's something that was big with us in 2012. And speaking of Virginia, I want to also bring up there's some other great candidates that came from Virginia, like Virgil Goode from the Constitution Party, and we may have some folks actually from the Constitution Party coming on next Wednesday. So we're working on that. And we also may have some folks you'll be calling in later on this evening to talk about Sarvis and his campaign and things of that nature. But we'll see if they come on. We're having some discussion right now on them
coming in.
So, or the
what
I
would like to see,
calling in.
What I would like to see in Virginia is something similar that happened in the Dave Bratt campaign and something that is happening right now in our local congressional race. When Dave Bratt ran, he had a number of other patriotic, libertarian-minded, liberty movement, whatever you want to call it, Tea Party, people who were not part of the establishment. They weren't exactly identical by all means. I mean, they had a general commitment to the Constitution and some differences, but they all agreed that whoever was going to be the front runner, the rest of them would get in back of and support. And they did that, and that is a major factor as to why the vote wasn't split and why Dave Bratt won. Here in Pennsylvania, we have a first-termer in Congress named Cartwright, who is a very, very progressive Obama guy. And they re-engineered the local districts so that they would be able to basically keep incumbents in. And this is, even though it's a Republican state that is part of the political calculus and the deal-making, and there's plenty of stuff on this, folks. If you want to look in the news, you can find tons. There was even a lawsuit on this. But came down to was this is a safe Democratic district. Even though there's a lot of Republicans, they kind of lumped us in with a major urban area that's Democrat, and there's really – it was very hard for anyone to win against this guy. So here's this guy who's in there. He's done one term. You can look at his record. It stinks, in my opinion. He votes with Obama. He votes for statism. He votes against the Constitution and liberty. I don't care what party he is. I really don't. In any case, there are a whole bunch of candidates who ran in the Republican primary, and they all agreed up front. And there's some pretty decent fellas in there. They all agreed that whoever won, the rest of them would get in behind, and they would support, and they would push that person over. There's nobody seen who's going to win in the election in the fall. However, I will say that my experience locally in my congressional district is that they are keeping their word, that they are doing their best to get behind a man named Dave Moylan, who is a doctor. He's a county coroner and a cancer specialist. And I'm not endorsing anyone. I can't as a civil servant. But I will say that his views are certainly worth endorsing, in my opinion. And I'm very pleased to see that rather than this disunity and everyone just taking their ball and going home and being all, miffed that they didn't get picked, they're realizing this is much bigger than any one of us. You know, any one of us might end up being the one who's that sharp tip of the spear that might be the prominent person, and you have no way of predicting. But the rest of us have to get behind it if it's going in the right direction. There's a topic, I really hope that James is able to call in because he's really, really in on this. But coming up later this week, we have a major anti-illegal immigration push that's going on across the entire country. And the fellow who is organizing this started only about 2 months ago. I mean, he just started about 2 months ago. He's really fed up. He did a lot of research, and he started putting it out there. And now there is coordinated effort, not just within his group, but with all these other groups that where immigration is not. His name is Paul Arnold. It's the National Day of Protesting Against Immigration Reform and Amnesty Border Surge. Just today, he's been interviewed by WorldNet Daily. He's been contacted by NBC and ABC. The largest newspaper in Mexico just did an interview with him. So the Mexican people are going to be able to get to read what we're about in this issue, which is we don't hate Mexicans or Guatemalans or anything else. We can't afford it. We can't deal with it. There's just too many problems with this method of just letting little children come in unaccompanied with health issues, split from their family. I mean, it just goes on and on. But in any case, Paul just commented today. That's Paul Arnold. You can find him on Facebook. But this was completely unexpected for him. He did not expect to be the sharp point of anything. He just simply started something, and this one happened to catch fire. There's no predicting, folks, what's going to catch fire. At the same time as Mr. Arnold started his thing, several other people started stuff, and they started stuff after the fact, and some people have been working on this issue for years, and it didn't matter because an awful lot of people decided to get behind what seemed to be a really clean, a really honest, and a really attractive effort that really was bringing people into it. It was started to grow really fast. And a lot of these other groups put their ego aside, and these other leaders, they put their egos aside, and they said, it doesn't matter that I've been doing this for 5 years. It doesn't matter that all the research that he did was the research I did, he just had to look at. It doesn't matter. He's the guy right now, and this is the issue right now, and it's working, so let's get behind him. And there's no recriminations. There's no backbiting. There's no people saying, well, he could have done this better. He could have done that better. No. What they're doing is what we need to do, which is being unified for what's right. And what's right is compassion, absolutely, but it's got to be sensible. We certainly cannot give amnesty. We have 92.5 million people who are of working age who did not hit the lottery, who did not marry rich, who did not get really sick, who are not incarcerated, 18 to 65-year-olds who are not working. They're out of the workforce. We already have 40 million illegals. We don't need any more illegals, and we cannot, no matter how wealthy America even once was, much less today, we cannot afford to take care of our own people at this point, much less take care of the entire world. And the security issues of an open border are just astoundingly dangerous. Besides the narco-terroristas, the narco-terrorists and the cartels and the MS-13 gang members who are coming in here, and one just committed a murder and got caught for it today. Another one was picked up with an illegal handgun. These are dangerous folks, some of them. They're not children necessarily. And a lot of these children are dangerous without meaning to be because they're very ill with communicable diseases. And unlike Ellis Island, where a lot of our folks came through, where they would let you in after you were quarantined and received health treatment until you were not a danger to everybody else, these people are being shipped. These kids are being shipped on commercial carriers, on buses and planes, with no warning, to neighborhoods full of people who are not prepared and who don't have any immunity to tropical diseases or things that we eradicated a long, long time ago.
Right. Like smallpox coming back. Yeah.
God help us. So the point is, whatever the issue is, you don't know who's going to be the lead guy. Mr. Sarvis could be the next senator. If he's not the next senator, or if it's getting to be August and September, if they're he mentioned seven excellent candidates. I'm not sure who all of them are right now in Virginia for senator, but if they're all neck and neck, I don't see any reason for any one of them to step down necessarily. But if one of them has become a front runner and they're not objectionable, and their message is basically at the root of it, the heart of it, the same, that they're for the Constitution, limiting government, ensuring the God-given liberties to the people that have been stolen from us, then I think the rest of them need to back down, give their money, give their time, and actually campaign for the other fellow or lady who's the front runner.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to look more into that, and I want to see all those other different candidates. I know they have a full slate of candidates for the Libertarian Party in Virginia, and I was going to ask him whether he thought that was a bellwether for the rest of America. But I do want to bring in, and someone who may be able to answer that, he might have a stronger hold on the pulse of what Libertarians are doing, is Kelly. We have Kelly back in the show. Welcome back.
Hey, I'm sorry, I had a high-priority call. All right.
No, not a problem.
Yeah, Libertarians are varied between states. Oklahoma had like a 300 or 400 people turnout in their state convention. California had a big 50 with 35 million people. Oh, boy, we got our 50. Anyway, so the states are different amongst the Libertarian parties. And Virginia might have some really good leadership and really strong media marketing ideas, and we could see a little difference here. So it could be interesting. The what's the saying? Competition makes everybody better and lowers the prices. So we could see something interesting about Virginia as it goes about. And by the way, I noticed Sarvis is not with us anymore, but I did want to ask you if you could send him my phone number because I'd like to talk to him, give him some hints. I get frustrated with Libertarians because there are certain things that, look, here's the deal, okay? If I could start a political party in my county, it would have different categories. Oh, wait a minute, categories? What do you mean? Yeah. Personal liberty. This is what we believe on personal liberty. Then you go start working with the chain of command. On the county level, this is what we believe. On a state level, this is what we believe the state should or shouldn't do. On a federal level, this is what we should and shouldn't do. Anybody brings an idea to the platform, first question is, well, which category? The ironic thing about this is when people show up, and I've actually done this, I had like 16-plus people show up at short notice. The ironic thing about this is the group will say, you know what, that's a personal liberty. Oh, and through this, the whole group gets educated on where these decisions should be made. Personal level, state, hands off. Or it should be at the county, or it should be state or federal. And through this exercise, people realize their fundamental rights as individuals. And ironically, the big long-term thing about this is that government will be less and less because all of a sudden people realize, oh, a lot of life's decisions are up to the people. So it's kind of a different approach. I don't see this in any political party. I tried this at Libertarian Party a little bit, and they like didn't have time or something, good old boys. And yes, Libertarian Party has good old boys like the R's and D's do. But I do want to throw out something kind of interesting about our political system in general. In order to, and this came from the county chair, his name was Donald Schweitzer, county chair here of the Republican Party. He says, you know what, when you get in politics, it gets ugly. It gets brutal. You get beat up. You want to quit. It's just tough. It weeds a lot of people out. But if you're willing to put up with a lot of junk, you can actually rise to the top and really make a difference. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty stunning, because I see people that totally agree with me, but then they get nitpicky and they get into an argument, and I'm like, well, okay, you know, you can believe what you want to believe, that's fine. But people disagree so much that they get out of party politics. And when you're in party politics, I'm not talking about every day, oh, you watch the news, you complain to your friend, not that stuff. I'm talking about the real work, which is at the county level, and then you work state and federal. The process of working up the chain of command is very bruising, and that's why a lot of people get out. It's quite an interesting study to see that internal politics is different from the outside world. It's just bizarre to me. And by the way, here's a Ron Paul plug. Ron Paul knew this, and he lived this, and he was able to work up to where he ran for president, because he knows this person's got an ego and he wants his agenda. This guy, oh, they can't get along. How do we get them to go along so we can get unity in numbers? And how do we make a difference by joining together and putting our egos aside? Ego is, I'm ranting right now, but ego is one of the biggest challenges to make a positive difference. The founders, yeah, they had some of it too, but they were able to unify, kick the British off the continent, start with the Articles of Confederation, unify enough to have a constitution. The states ratified it. Somehow these people, through this process, suppress their egos for the betterment of mankind. Isn't this interesting? I'm giving you some insider stuff here, what goes on inside a party, because I suffered a little bit in when we had our state convention. But it's like, oh my gosh. So what I'm saying is people get involved, but be ready. Be ready to have patience for those who have egos.
Oh, Kelly, I have to take issue with
real
one
quick,
thing. Go ahead.
Real quick, I'm going to interject here. We do have someone we were hoping we'd be able to make it onto the show. And so we'll open their mic and welcome him in, and then we'll bring it back to you, Dan. And then he can tell us what he has going on this weekend. And that, of course, is our friend from Overpasses for America, James Neighbors. Thank you very much, James, for calling to the show. How are you?
Hey, Robert, I'm doing all right. We are having waves of storms go by, and I caught you between waves, and my reception's been terrible. I was on the phone with CNN for the better part of an hour today, having to call and recall because of my reception out here. And the reason I was on the phone with CNN, and you know, we're talking about, you know, CNN, you know, Communist News Network.
I don't know how bad it is. Nothing.
You know, no, I'm actually impressed. I'm very happy. It's kind of a landmark day as far as Overpass for America goes. We're actually getting mainstream media coverage. And I don't know. I haven't seen the report yet, but I was informed that we did. We're actually talked about on CNN earlier. I mean, just not very long ago. And so I'm waiting for a link on their website to the story so I can catch the video. So yeah, very very happy about that. But that's because, well, Overpasses is being the majority of the logistics as far as planning event locations for the largest no amnesty, enforce our border laws, no immigration reform protests in the history of the country. It'll be more widespread and coordinated, you know, timing coordinated than any other protest has ever been in this country. And Rush Limbaugh has talked about it. Levin has talked about it. We've got so many people. It's gone everywhere. It was on, you know, WND has talked about it, The Examiner, Western Journalism. It's really one of those things that's, I mean, literally it has gone viral. I mean, you know, when you've got Rush Limbaugh talking about it, now granted, he didn't mention this by name, but he said that hundreds of towns across the country were rising up in protest. Well, I'll take what I can get because that's the first time they've ever talked about us. And, you know, just the fact that you know, that he's put that out there. Now, the beauty of that is all of his listeners and all of Levin's listeners and all of CNN's viewers and readers are now going to know that the fact that there's going to be hundreds of protests with, you know, thousands upon thousands of people across the country out protesting, you know, against amnesty, protesting against immigration reform, and protesting to defend, you know, to demand that our borders be defended. And, you know, it's about time that enough Americans got together to stand up for America. You know, the fact of the matter is we spend a lot of money every year, you know, taking care of people that we, you know, spending money on people that we could be spending money on Americans for. You know, one out of five children in America go hungry every single day, but yet we're taking care of people on welfare, you know, on the welfare rolls that aren't even citizens. We're providing free tuition to people that aren't even citizens, or even legal immigrants. Don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about just citizens. I'm talking about legal immigrants. We're giving free things that we could be giving to legal immigrants and citizens of this country, and we're giving it away to people that don't have it coming. They have nothing coming because they violated the law just to come here, but we're paying the price for them violating our laws. And that's just that's inexcusable as a nation to be doing something like that. You know, maybe we should make it a little bit easier for them to get here. You know, that's not for me to decide. What has been decided is that they have laws, and we demand that they're enforced. We don't want any special laws. We don't want to demand any special treatment for anybody. We just want fair and equal treatment under the law, and the laws are already there. And as it is, a large number of business owners across this country would receive huge amounts of fines because they're knowingly hiring people that are not eligible to be hired in the United States. And it drives down the wages of legal immigrants and citizens of the United States. And, you know, everything about illegal aliens that come into this country is damaging to Americans and legal immigrants. There's nothing good to be said about their presence here. except that it's a cheap labor force for businesses. That's the only thing. Unfortunately, the side effect of that, that with it being a cheap labor force, is we have, you know, 92 million people unemployed in the United States that would have the opportunity for a job if somebody else wasn't taking it at a rate below minimum wage. And, you know, the in 2006, I found a study that stated in 2006, well, first, let me preface that. The number they throw out was 11 million. There's 11 million illegal aliens in the United States. That number is from 2004. In 2006, they estimated that there are 3 million illegal aliens coming into the United States every single year. If you do the math, that's a minimum of 35 million illegal aliens within the borders of the United States right now. That's greater than 1 out of 10 people living in the United States right now that have no right to be here, that are taking things away from Americans, they're taking things away from our children, they're taking things away from our veterans, from every facet of society. These people are taking away from it because our government allows it to happen. And it's time that America started putting America first. And so we're putting on the biggest protest in the history of America. And it's going to be from Maine to Hawaii, from Alaska to Texas. There are hundreds of locations where this is going to happen. I mean, if you don't have a car, find a friend that's got a car, because it's going to be something within driving distance of where you live. And really, everybody needs to start standing up to this government that does not care about Americans. You know, the fact that they haven't been enforcing these laws, well, follow the money. That's really what it boils down to. Follow the money. What company is funding these politicians' campaigns that benefits greatly from illegal alien labor? And that's what it really boils down to. And it boils down to attorneys who litigate to keep them here and to keep them out of prison. It boils down to hospitals who receive money from the government for taking care of people that don't belong here. It boils down to ranchers in Arizona. That's a part of their culture, is to bring in labor from across the border. They've done it for a very long time. And, you know, but it's time we put America first. You know, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with anybody from south of the border. I do have a problem with governments that don't recognize the sovereignty of nations. When Mexico and Guatemala and Honduras create an alliance to flood the United States with illegal aliens, that's called an act of war. If they may not be coming in shooting right away, we have large amounts of MS-13 gang members coming in. The reports of these children are vastly overblown. The majority of the ones they're transporting all across the country are males ages 17 and above. You know, and the fact is that from Dallas, Texas, to Los Angeles, and the difference between traveling from Dallas to Los Angeles on an airplane or Dallas to Guatemala City is a difference of 90 miles. We're talking a matter of minutes in an airplane, 90 miles. But yet, we're shipping them all over the United States instead of doing the more expedient route of actually sending them back to their country. And it's time we put a stop to that. It is time we put a stop to that. It's time to put America first. And until we quit giving the handouts to these nations and letting them send their problems to us, until we tell them no more, they have no incentive whatsoever to fix any of the problems that they have within their own borders, because all they have to do is send the overflow here. And anybody that's interested in joining in on this, just go to overpasses.org. The very first post, you'll see it's National Day of Protesting Against Amnesty, Immigration Reform, and Border Surge. If you click the link below that, it'll take you to a master list of events that are happening all around the country. That's actually the first time Overpasses has done this, because it's been an unbelievably daunting task to be able to get all those events compiled into one master list. But for this, we had two ladies named Shirley and Maria that have worked very hard and very diligently and to get that done. Alipac and Make Them Listen and several other groups. This is not just an Overpasses event, and that's one thing I want to emphasize. We are the logistics for it as far as most of the event locations, but this is a multi-group collaboration and cooperation to make this happen. This is not just one group. It's a large number of Americans that have stood up and said, enough is enough.
And Dan, let's go ahead and bring it back to you. And then, but real quick, while I'm thinking about it, I do want to talk about the show that's coming up Saturday. We can pan things out here. We can discuss things on off the air. But we are looking at noon, correct? This coming up Saturday to do a show with some live reports from there.
Yes, I will be there live in Oklahoma City at the pedestrian overpass between I-240 and Western, it's between Penn and Western in Oklahoma City, one of the busiest highways we have.
And I will be looking at some Cincinnati, perhaps, and I'll be also on site as well. I'll look more into that to see if there be some folks in my area.
So I'm very, very pleased that James came in and reiterated in detail all the stuff that I was saying about Paul Arnold and the big push this weekend, and I was hoping that you would be able to come in, James, because you are really the sharp tip of the spear on this one, providing logistical support and all the opportunities. What a genius idea. A simple V8 moment, hit yourself in the forehead and go, why didn't I think of that idea to do overpasses? And what an excellent, excellent way to affect people's consciousness. I'm not sure where I'm going to be on Saturday at noon. However, I'll be on the show. And there are a number of local events here. I'm kind of torn because I've got some personal things that I have to do, whether I'm going to be going all the way down to Philadelphia for an actual big rally right at the Mexican consulate, which could be a lot of fun. Or just going to one of the local overpasses, because there's a number of groups in the area that are going to be there, and that might be less people and more fun. So I don't know. But in any case, all of those issues that James was talking about are absolutely, absolutely correct, and more. The one thing I want you to remember, folks, is that we're not against legal immigration, and we're not against refugees being given refuge. My brother-in-law, he's a lawyer, he teaches law, and he was a former commissioner for homeless affairs in the Giuliani administration in New York. And when he was a private lawyer for free, pro bono, he would work in immigration law to help people who legitimately were in danger in their countries, not just because, of crime or poverty or just ordinary kinds of things, but who were targeted by their governments, who were, Christians who stood up against the Muslim government or capitalists and Democrats, people in favor of democracy who stood up against a communist government, that people who were really, really the kind of folks who were fighting in their countries for what America has and is losing really quick, but maybe getting back, and I never had a problem with what he was doing because he was really careful to make certain that these weren't just people who were trying to game the system and get in here for just economic reasons, but people who really wanted to become Americans. And the security aspects are far greater than just gang members. The large Mexican cartels and the MS-13 gangs are criminals, and just like most criminals, they'll do business with anybody else who's a criminal who has money. And there have been credible reports coming out of the border areas saying that they've been finding evidence that it's not just Guatemalan children and gang members who are coming in here, but also Chinese immigrants. And we have a lot of spies. China's not our friend. And I have nothing against legal Chinese immigrants who want to become Americans. I'll keep on reiterating that. And they've been finding evidence of Muslim illegal immigrants as well. And again, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with believing in Allah as long as you're not trying to blow anybody up or stone women
Dan,
or keep them from driving.
Well, Dan, this is Kelly here. Dan, you know, because you love the Constitution, you're a racist. So stop making this.
I get it.
Yeah, try stopping convincing us how much you love all sorts of races. It's irrelevant. You love the Constitution, therefore you're a racist.
Look, they can call me whatever they want, and I'll call them whatever is true, and people make their own minds up. The one good thing about the big lie versus truth over time is that truth wins out because people have an experience. You can tell me all you want how the economy is improving, but tell that to anybody who doesn't have a job and can't find a job, or has a family member who is a hard worker who can't find a job, and after a while they just stop believing it. Which brings us back to some of the things that you were saying earlier, Kelly. I was taking issue with when you said the founders suppressed their ego. They did not suppress their egos. There were constant rivalries. Washington himself, during the war, had to fight rivalries from other generals. There was constant politicking, which is part of the reason why it was so inefficient for a period of time, and nastiness under Adams, under the Alien and Sedition Acts, where he was locking up people who disagreed with him, under Jefferson, who had scurrilous newspapers that printed absolute lies in partisan manners. Look, you were talking about politics, and you quoted a fellow, and you said politics is nasty, but I have to ask our listeners, what is it out there that's worth anything in your lives that isn't nasty at times? What is it that's worth something that isn't worth fighting for? And if it's a fight, some will get nasty. And the rise to the top that you mentioned, it is important. Having leaders, whether they're in politics or leaders like Paul Arnold and James Neighbors, stepping up and being that sharp point of the spear, that is incredibly important. But a leader is nothing without followers. And in my opinion, coordinated efforts of the lower members, the rank and file, and that means that, yep, just your regular folks who just follow and go and do stuff, who go hold a sign, who sign a petition, who get out the vote, who man the phone banks, who make a $10 donation to some campaign. Yeah, you're important. But it's those low-level leaders, the ones who coordinate the small groups. When they get together and they work in unison, that is more powerful than any person who calls themselves a leader and steps out front of something. In this state, we have a Republican administration, we have a Republican House and a Republican Senate, and they've enacted almost no libertarian, conservative, constitutional, Republican legislation in years. And the reason is because whether there's leadership at the top or not, and that is really, really debatable, when anybody steps up to try and lead, whether it's the people who are in the elite parties or the people who are trying to reform the elite parties, the outsiders, they're running into a wall of corruption. Now, that wall of coordinated effort of the low-ranking leaders who decide, hey, look, I've got something good, and I'm going to hold on to it. I'm going to fight as hard and as nasty as it takes to keep my little corrupt fiefdom, okay? That works for the other side, too. If we get enough small groups and enough small leaders to work together, from that is where the big leaders are going to come from. And quite frankly, a George Washington stepping forward today would do no good unless he had enough small leaders following him. Washington was inspirational. George Washington was inspirational, and it was because of his character and because he was trusted and because he was competent. But more than that, it was because the people who did the work trusted him. They trusted
yeah.
him to lead them into battle. The non-coms. You know, if you look at any organization, and we'll use a military organization as a very good example because most people are somewhat familiar with this, even if they're not veterans. You can have a general like Patton, and he may be blood and guts and able to really make tremendous plans and, you know, really get ready to go full bore, blood and guts, and go for that victory. He won't be able to do a damn thing unless he's got the people supporting him. And that doesn't mean the rank and file private, the grunt. They're going to follow who? They're going to follow the non-com, the professional, long-term soldier who understands how things work, what's important, what isn't, and how to keep their men safe and still achieve the objective. In a business, it's not the CEO who gets anything done. Most of them aren't worth the breath they take. Most of the CEOs I've met in this country in the last 10 or 15 years, and I've met just a few, they're really, I don't know, maybe they played swallow the leader or something like that, but they don't deserve their position.
Well, hold the leader. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I'm sorry. But,
are we in Vard Logic After Dark?
It is. But in any case, it's the low-level management that makes the difference. It's those people who are your first-level supervisors and your second-level supervisors, the ones who came from the working area, who know the work, who know the workers, who are able to take the directives and say, oh, my God, look what they're asking us to do. How do we actually accomplish this without destroying ourselves? That's what's important.
Yeah, well, I wanted to throw some thoughts out. let's see. Washington had devotions. People called him in devotions a number of times, which means he realized to himself he didn't have the answers. And, yes, we had these ego fights and blah, 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 and back and forth. And Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were the best of friends, but they had like a 5-year sabbatical from each other. And then they continued to be good friends, and they died July 4th, 1826. Kind of an honor there. But there was, yes, egos. Alexander Hamilton, oh, my gosh. If I met him today, I would still challenge him to the duel. He's like, I married into royalty now. I have finally attained what I was born to. He said that in front of his wife on his wedding day. Are you out of your freaking mind? You would dishonor a woman like that? Anyway, so there were some. There's no question about it. However, I have a reference standard to go by, which is Ronald Reagan. He said, you know, if you're not willing to take any of the credit, you can get an awful lot done. And I think the founders had enough unity despite their egos. I think they had enough unity to accomplish what they needed, and because the people saw that they were sincere, they did follow them, second, third, fourth, all the way to the man on the field dying, which, by the way, about 25,000 men died for to kick King George off the continent. So there is, you know, I sometimes have to check my own ego. I mean, I've come up with a recent saying of influence. It's like this. And by the way, I'm 48. It's like some of these 28-year-olds, they think they're God's gift to mankind. And, of course, probably everybody thought that at one time of themselves. And there was a situation where I thought, oh, it's the perfect time to use this. You know, back in the days when I was in my 20s, when I was God's gift to mankind. Yes, God's full exclusive gift to mankind. I would tell people what to do, and they started getting upset with me, and it just didn't work. And I finally realized I'm not God's gift to mankind, and that's ironically when I started to become God's gift to mankind, is when I acknowledged I wasn't God's gift to mankind. I despised who I was when I was in my 20s. And I have to check if my ego is... It disgusts me to think what I'd done earlier, but if it's not about me and I get the fulfillment of helping other people, what happens here is I don't care about my ego. My ego is set aside when I have fulfillment by helping other people. It's a fundamental mind shift, if you will. So I'm just still trying to figure it all out. I just know at times I got to, or a close friend's got to help me make sure my ego is in check.
That's a good point.
Well, I don't know. I thought God's gift to humanity. I mean, there may have been a time where I thought I was God's gift to women, but no, I'm just kidding.
Well, Robert, your wife thinks so. But in any case, of all the founders,
has a secret. Robert has a big time secret. Why, very possibly, he was God's gift to women is because he doesn't say much.
No.
I could go a long ways toward explaining why I've been single for 18 years because I don't ever stop talking.
Well, see, Robert has a certain giftedness that I don't have, which is to shut up. He's got the gift. I mean, I mentioned the eighth deadly sin is hogging the microphone. I'm guilty. Okay, but Robert, oh my gosh, he's got a gift with women that I don't. And maybe if I shut up, I'll learn more.
It is the first step to wisdom.
I'm just kidding, guys.
There was a founding father, just to get back a little bit on topic, who before there was a Revolutionary War, one of the last to become an American who still considered himself an Englishman, who lived in England as a representative of all the different colonies trying to gain English rights for Englishmen here in America. And that was Benjamin Franklin. He was already a pretty old guy when the Revolution started. And for years and years in Philadelphia, he had this habit of getting things done, and this is how he would do it. He would come up with a brilliant idea because the man was literally a genius. I mean, he was in that realm of Newton and I don't know about Einstein and that sort of stuff, but probably certainly in the realm of like a Michelangelo or a Da Vinci. He was a genius. But he'd have this idea and he thought to himself, and this is from his writings, if I put this forward, they're going to go, oh, it's just Franklin again, that guy. So what he'd do is he'd look around at the various movers and shakers in town, and he'd pick somebody who hadn't had a lot of attention lately, who really kind of was doing a good job, and he'd say, listen, come have a dinner with me. And while they're having dinner, he says, look, I have this idea. What do you think of it? The guy likes the idea. And he says, but I can't put it forward. They're just going to say it's Franklin again. So here's an idea. If you like this, you put the idea forward, okay? You put that idea forward, claim it for your own. It's fine with me. I won't say a word at all. People will debate it. They'll go back and forth, and they'll talk about the positives and the negatives and everything else. And then I'll come in, if necessary, and explain the ultimate positives as to why it's a good idea and say that I'm willing to back your idea. And he found a lot of takers because a lot of people wanted to be someone who moved things in a proper direction that helped the society. And because he did this, he was able to start volunteer fire companies, never existed before, except not in the way they are here in America, start University of Pennsylvania. He was able to start insurance agencies. He was able to do, oh, my God, so many things because he didn't have himself involved at all. He was just the guy who stepped in on hour three of the debate at the tavern where people had already talked through all the pros and cons and why it was good or not and said, I like the idea. And Franklin was a successful businessman and known as a genius. So when he said he liked the idea, people went, well, Franklin's for it. And then he said, in fact, I like the idea so much that I'm going to put some funding behind it. Who else was willing to help endorse this with me, help sponsor this with me? And by not putting himself at the center of things, he was able to accomplish a great deal of good for the citizens of Pennsylvania and started things that had never been started anywhere in the world before that became American traditions of voluntary associations for mutual benefit. What a genius.
And James, if you'd like to chime in, we've got the mic over to you.
Well, and that's, you know, really that's, you know, this, these, you know, that's really, you know, Dan touched on something. It's, you know, that's really kind of at the heart of what Overpasses is really all about. Is nobody in it is big. You know, there's no, you know, no big name brand people, is, if you might want to call them that, or celebrity people. It's a lot of small people. I mean, really, I suppose, you know, you could look at it as like a school of fish. You know, individually, we're going, you know, we get devoured. But, you know, when if you have just one little piranha floating around by itself, something's going to come along and eat it. But when you have a school of them, and individually they take their little bite cow that waded into their waters, then, well, the school of piranha are going to win, because they take their own little bite here, they take a little bite there, and pretty soon they've got that thing stripped down to the bone. And if Americans were to all take their own individual action against this gargantuan government that we have, I mean, they're waiting in our waters, really, and that's the way Americans need to, what they need to realize is, you know, they're in D.C. They're the cow in D.C., and they're waiting in our waters. And if we all take our individual bites as a school, as a, you know, working in unison towards you know, getting rid of that, it'll happen. And, you know, we can't assume that we can take it all on our own. I mean, you know, there are other social media sites. Just for example, you've got the Tea Party community, you've got Google Plus, and you know, there's a few others out there, but that's the two that come to mind. And I would love to be able to be on every one of those with Overpasses for America, but there's only so many hours in a day. I'm taking, you know, we're taking our bite right there in Facebook, and we're directing it outward as greatly as we can. And, you know, we hit Twitter every now and then and take a little bite there just to hit a slightly different angle. But the key is everybody working together. You know, Gandhi was a very good example. They didn't even have weapons. They didn't even have weapons. What did they do to stop the British? They quit working. They just sat down and did nothing, literally did nothing, and shut the country down with a, you know, completely passive resistance by just saying no and carrying out the act, or, you know, putting an act towards the words no. And once the British realized that they could no longer control the country, India was able to throw off the shackles of the British Empire. And, you know, they evolved a little bit over the decades after that. You know, they had to throw off a caste system. And I understand, you know, that they as a society are still working on that, but they had that for thousands of years. The fact they've made any progress on it in just decades is phenomenal. But it was because the people said no more. And then they took actions towards putting, you know, towards making no more have substance. And that's really what the American people need to do. We just simply need to say no more and take an action as an individual. And enough individuals take actions, well, then you have the people taking actions. And, you know, there has been a shift in the attitudes of Americans towards wanting justice in this country again, and moving away from this lawless government. And, you know, is Overpasses, you know, the entire reason that happened? Well, certainly not. You know, we're part of that school of fish you know, you've got the alternative media, you've got the, you know, the newspapers and the radio, you know, the blog radio shows, and enough, you know, enough different venues that people are beginning to communicate these different ideas, which we call them different, but they're really not different at all. They're just a reiteration of the ideas that made America what it is. And it's like, well, everybody's guilty of it. People that are married often get divorced for the same reason, because you get so involved with something and you become accustomed to it, and then you become complacent towards maintaining it. And if you do that in a marriage, if you become complacent and you don't take the actions necessary to keep that marriage working correctly, well, pretty soon you won't be married anymore. You'll be another disgruntled divorcee. And we as Americans, as a society, have been neglecting our duties as Americans, by and large, to do the necessary actions to keep the relationship between the government and the people a productive one. We became complacent. We let them become dominant. They know that according to the Constitution, they aren't allowed to do the things they do. But, you know, they try to justify it. And we just do, you know, we have done nothing. And because we've done nothing, until we tell them no more, that, you know, you're going to abide by, these are your rules, it's called the Constitution, these are amendments, you can't exceed those. And until we stand up, and we are beginning to, I mean, America is really still very much asleep, but I do believe there is a great awakening, not just in America really either, I do believe it's happening in other places around the world, where they see that freedom is an inalienable right. A government does not grant it to you. You're born with it. Whether you believe in God or a creator, or whether you're an atheist, we're all born with inalienable rights of self-destiny, and a controlling government does not allow you to do that. You know, right down to just simple regulations, right down to every time they add another penny on every dollar of tax, they take away a little bit of that ability for self-destiny. Because if you work, but then 25 cents out of every dollar is taken, well, that's 25% of the fruits of your labors that you're no longer able to determine with by yourself as to what you're going to do with it. Your liberty has just been dissolved another percent, you know, another small amount. And, you know, it's, people are starting to wake up to the fact that that is not what our nation was intended. One of the most entertaining philosophical, I guess, arguments that I had with somebody, and it was actually in favor of Ron Paul. Now, I didn't know much about Ron for, well, until just recently, really, and there's still a lot to learn about him that I don't know. But one thing I did learn is that, you know, is his beliefs in a very limited federal government under strict constitutional guidelines. And I was describing that to somebody one time who called herself a patriot. And I described to her that, what, you know, the basic idea of what a government, you know, Ron Paul, you know, in a constitutional outlook would be like. And she was just looked horrified, absolutely horrified. And she said, well, that would be complete anarchy. I'm like, no, you've mistaken anarchy with freedom. What you have been conditioned to accept is control and no responsibility. And you have ceded your rights to, you know, for the luxury of being complacent, if you want to call it a luxury. And she just simply could not fathom a nation to where we didn't have a government that was telling us virtually how to control, how we must behave in every facet of our lives. It was just mind-boggling to her. And unfortunately, you know, she was an intelligent woman, but she could never get past the idea that our government, as it is far, far too large for what was ever intended, and that many of the things that our federal government now take for granted was never intended, that we were intended to take care of that ourselves. And, well, she was in overpasses, and she had been very active, but once I described to her what a real constitutional government was, she didn't want to have anything to do with this anymore. It's really kind of a shame.
You know, James, the thing about a woman like that go ahead.
I was just going to say, go ahead, Dan, and then we're going to bring Holly on, because Holly is in the queue. And so go ahead, Dan, and then we'll bring in Holly.
The thing about a woman like that is that she's confusing one very important thing. Again, boil it down to basics. Government doesn't exist. There is no such thing as government. There is no such thing as churches. There is no such thing as a business. What there is people who have an organization. The people are what run the government. The government acts as if it cannot trust the people. It cannot trust individuals, and yet it's made up of individuals, people. Too many people with too much power over the rest of us. If you gave her the question, do you trust that you know, this nice person, to have the power to make decisions for you and take away your natural rights to make decisions for yourself, she would say no. The only time that that's appropriate is if you have a child who is underage and doesn't understand what's going on because they don't have experience, or someone who is of extremely, extremely limited mental capacity and needs someone to help guide them. Certainly, those people may be exceptions, but for functioning adults, we don't need somebody to tell us what to do. We're not going to accept someone to tell us what to do. Even if we have bosses telling us what to do, we're very skeptical about it. Well, the people in government are just people. And it's not 25% that they're taking from us. Look at your taxes, folks. Don't just look at your federal taxes. Look at your state taxes. And then find all the hidden taxes on everything you buy. The taxes on your food, the taxes on your gas, the taxes on your phone bill, the fees that are not called taxes but are taxes. They're taking close to 75% of what you make. That leaves you just enough to not quite make your bills and go paycheck to paycheck. You want to talk about what a mass of people can do? All right. The last presidential election set a benchmark, and it's a pretty standard and accepted thing that if you want to run for president, you really, really want to give it a great effort and really go full bore. You need about $1 billion. Oh, my God, they say we've got to get money out of politics. Folks, people spend $6 billion a year in this country on shoes. Shoes, that's those things you put on your feet. Shoes, $6 billion. I don't know what we spend on toothpaste or breakfast cereal, but it's billions. Coca-Cola and Dr. Pepper, and I'm not endorsing them because I don't drink any of that swill, but we spend billions on this stuff. 315 million Americans who are citizens, according to the census. 100 million of them, that's less than a third. We're not going to say 50%. We're going to say less than a third of decent Americans of both parties, Democrat and Republican, of the left, of the right, waking up, realizing that their party and the other party are not serving liberty, that are not limiting themselves or abiding with the constitutional limits on government power, on this organization's power, the people of this organization's power. If 100 million people put up 10 bucks, that's $1 billion. So, you know, I'm not running for nothing, but if me or James or Kelly or Rob or any of you out there or Holly was running for president, if you could get one-third of the country to give you $10, you got a fair shot at being the next president of the United States. And over to you.
And speaking of Holly, I will be bringing Holly in. And also, I do see other folks who are in the queue, whether they just want to listen to the extended period in which we are now in. But I do see some folks on the line. If you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial, and that will let me know that you would like to come into the show. We'd be happy to bring in and have you chime in on the topic for this evening. So without any further ado, Holly, thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. Doing some vacationing this week. It's the first vacation I had for about 8 months, so I was ready to get some done. So we're just going to some amusement parks today with my wife and my daughter.
Did you ride a roller coaster?
I cannot ride roller coasters. I have a dislocated collarbone that just allows me to do that. But my daughter and my wife love them, and they spent a good deal. But while they were riding roller coasters, I did get some much-wanted reading in. I'm just sitting back, relaxing in a not-too-hot day here for this area, and it was a nice breeze. So while they were rolling around
in
roller coasters, I was able to actually relax and read a book, which I haven't been able to do in a very, very long time. I think it's been literally years since I was actually able to sit down
and
read
a
book.
Wow, well, good for you, and I'm glad
you all just a novel I like to do. So,
there you go.
Anyway,
good for you. No, I just called
you.
In. I had a couple of questions, Robert, one for you and one for James. And the one for you is, did you say, and I came in late on the show, that you're having a show Saturday?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that regarding the National Day of Protesting?
We'll be doing a special edition Saturday or at noon. Mm-hmm.
And is that regarding the National Day of Protesting?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. And do you have a link for that so I can share it?
I have not made the link yet. I will be working on it either this evening or Thursday evening. I just had to confirm a few things on whether I'd be able to make it. And I just found out there is one going on in my area, and I'm going to try to actually do a live broadcast, and I'll just have to see if I have the technical capabilities to do that, because I'll have to be able to get online while I'm out there, as well as
I would just ask
in.
If you get that up and going, if you don't mind, send me that link. And then I wanted to ask if James is still on here. Where, James, are you going to be Saturday? Are you going to be at Lawton?
No, my car is still in the shop being restored. And so I will be up here in Oklahoma City on the pedestrian overpass between Penn and Western on I-240.
Okay. I was just wondering, and I don't know if you know, but I want to let you know. Of course, you know I'm doing the Glenpool one. My husband is the Oklahoma coordinator for the two million bikers. They've got a group of about 20 so far that are going to be going to Lawton. I just want to let you know that.
Well, wow, that's awesome. I know Donald down there, he's gone out there a few times, and Sherry, and I can't remember the name of the other gentleman that goes down there with them, but yeah, the three of them stand alone, just three of them, but they've been out there a few times just by themselves, and they will love the company. I won't even tell them. We'll let it be a surprise, unless you already have told them.
No. That's why one reason I called in was to kind of let you know there's about 20 so far that are going. There's 21 that, are maybes. And,
I
of course,
I'll
you can fit more than one on a bike, and then you'll have some probably in vehicles and what they call, coaches or something. I don't know. Cages.
I think I'll just give them a hint to tell them they need to make sure they're there because there's a surprise coming. Kind of like that birthday present or a Christmas present, you know?
And can you tell me anything, can you give me any information regarding how that is set up? Is it near Fort Sill? I mean, what goes on down there?
If I remember off the top of my head, it's going to be on the overpass at Cache Road and I-44.
Okay, let me write that down.
But it'll be right there.
Is that C-A-S-H or C-A-C-H?
C-A-C-A-G.
Okay, Road Overpass, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, if you wanted to check real quick, if you just went to the Overpasses website at overpasses.org and then click the link for the master list, all of the Oklahoma events are in there. And
their
event
is saying Overpass on I-44 and Rogers Lane and Lawton.
Okay, well, it may have been Rogers, but it's the, to my knowledge, it is the exit for the primary entrance to Fort Sill. And so we should have all of the traffic going that from civilians and military that are leaving and going to Fort Sill that day.
Okay, maybe you could send me a PM on Facebook with a name and number of someone that's been down there, like someone that you just mentioned, you know, where I could have my husband to contact them or they could contact him. As far as where they set up and everything, just to double check on that.
You know, I'm not certain I've actually got any phone numbers down there, but let me double check.
Okay.
No, I need to get Sherry's phone number. I actually don't have that. She's the Lawton area coordinator.
Okay.
And, okay. Sherry Vincent.
Okay. Let me write that down.
Yeah. So. She's got a little black avatar. I need to click on it one day and see what it is. I just know it catches my eye every time I see it, but I don't know exactly what it is.
All righty. Well, that should be enough for me to start looking there. And just one thing I wanted to mention now, a lot of these are veterans, and they don't mind, rallying against, you know, amnesty and everything that's going on at our borders. But what they will not do is they will not, as far as the military that works at Fort Sill, they will not protest against them, obviously, because
they're just
following orders and doing their job. So that's one thing that I've already heard,
That's not on the table at all. The only reason they're protesting outside of Fort Sill is just because that's where the illegal aliens are being housed.
Exactly. Okay,
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that. I mean, we're not holding a grudge against the military for doing it. Like you said, they're just following orders.
Exactly.
And,
as long as we're on the same page there, we're good.
yeah, that's it's not a, I'm quite certain that if you were to give the military members in every military base where we're housing the illegals, so what would you prefer we do with them? I'm quite certain they would all say we need to load them up on a C-17 and fly them back to their home nation.
Right.
That would be, I would expect that would be every one of theirs, or at least 99% of them would say they need to go home.
Right.
The sad thing is, in regards to the children, and I do want to mention this, because there are a large number of children. It's not the majority of people that like the media, like the mainstream media is portraying, but there are, a large number of children that have come into the United States with this recent border surge. These children were kidnapped from their homes for the most part and transported up to the United States. The reason that the diseases, the scabies and the tuberculosis and other things are running so rampant with these kids is because they were packed into semi-trailers and delivery vans. I mean, just packed in tight. Some of them died on a trip up here because they weren't given food or water. And the children that were transported in that manner were forced to stay in these vehicles, in these transports, with the corpses. And so they are traumatized. So I do.
Absolutely, yeah.
I do feel sorry for them in that regard, but they, their families, for the most part, are still back in the nations that they came from. So we have split up families, and Barack Obama for his own political agenda, and I'm not even certain, where he would see it as a gain necessarily, except for, you know, overwhelming the system with the Cloward-Piven strategy. We have people that are estranged from their families involuntarily, and the humane thing to do would be to go ahead and give them medical treatment. I understand that because they didn't, let's face it, if you get crammed in the back of a semi with somebody that's got tuberculosis and then you come down with tuberculosis, that's not your fault. We can treat that. And as a humane, generous people, we should treat that just because it's the right thing to do. But they need to be reunited with their families just as soon as humanly possible. And that would be the American way to do things and to take care of them because they were brought here against their will and to cure, or treat their medical issues.
Well, some of the families actually sent their children on this trip. So to be able to find them, when they actually sent their children on this trip, they're not going to want to be found. They're going to want their kids to stay in America. And where I'm coming from, and I'm compassionate too, and I hate, and war is war, and you get civilian casualties. But the thing is, we can't even take care of our own veterans right now. Come on. If it wasn't for them, we owe them everything. So,
we've got one out of five children in America that go without eating every day. They eat some, but they don't eat enough. I mean, they go hungry for at least a meal every single day. And, it boils down to, I'm sorry for the situation in their country. And I've had a lot of people call me cold and callous for saying this. But, our founding fathers didn't run from their problems. They didn't go down to Mexico or they didn't go, they didn't get on a ship and fly over sail over to India. They stayed here and confronted their problems, and they created a prosperous nation. And I would think that with as many people, we have 35 million people in this country at a minimum that are here illegally. I would think that if those people had remained home and did whatever was necessary to achieve liberty, then where they live now would be a much better place. I mean, there might have been a civil war, or a revolution to achieve that. But, we did that here.
And we're not really getting the whole story anyway. And there's a lot of secrecy going on, a lot of hiding of things going on.
And the fact that we've got that they're finding prayer rugs and translation books or how to learn English, if you speak Farsi. They're finding books like this in the desert on our side of the border.
Mm-hmm.
We have terrorists coming into the country right now. We have Chinese nationals coming into the country. We have people from Pakistan coming into the country right now. It is not just Latino nation people. The majority, certainly. Honestly, though, I think that those people are important, the smokescreen for the threat that's coming across our border.
And there's
right
members
now.
In my family that came here legally. They did it the right way, so it's just kind of a slap in the face in their face, I just want to say that I'm really hoping that Friday and Saturday really brings a lot of awareness to those that are still asleep, and I'm just hoping for a solution. I'm listening to all the different news, and I'm trying to look for that solution. And what I'm gathering is we need to secure the border first. And that's not an easy thing to do because of the Rio Grande River and different spots. But it can be done. And from what I gather, it's been done before. I don't remember under what administration, but it worked for a little while, and then for some reason it didn't work. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, it was actually Eisenhower, and they used what we would call a politically incorrect term. It was called Operation Wetback, and it really was called that. I know a lot of people hear that, and they go, no, it certainly couldn't have been called that. No, it really was. If you would go Google Operation Wetback, we deported every single illegal alien we could find, and then they defended the borders. Honestly, I would think, you know, there's something, and I'd have to go find it specifically, that, you know, doesn't allow our military to operate within our borders on a military mission. Well, with that being the case, considering the alliance that Honduras, Guatemala, and Mexico have formed to flood our nation with illegal aliens, I would say we should set up camp on the far side, on the south side of the Rio Grande, and say we're occupying this 1 mile of land until we get the wall finished, and you can try to stop us.
Yeah. So, anyway, something's got to be done, that's for sure. I mean, and even like Jim Bridenstine up there, what, in District 1, Oklahoma District 1, I believe it is, you know, there's the aspect of the sex trafficking or human trafficking that's going on, and these kids are given phone numbers that once they get here and they purposely want to be found to be taken to a detention center or whatever, and then give this phone number and say this is my aunt or uncle, and actually it's someone that's going to be human trafficking them.
You know, you mentioned human trafficking, and I'm glad you did, because there's a 500,000 American children. Most of them are girls in their early teens that disappear and are never seen again in the United States. And it's feared that the majority of them, you know, there are runaways that go off and go off and disappear that way. But the majority of them are being sold into human trafficking sex rings across the world. And in countries like Dubai, just for example, the rich over there will actually sign contracts with like Playboy Playmates to come over there and basically be concubines. Well, if the rich in a country like that are willing to pay for a concubine, somebody that's like a Playboy Playmate, then it's not a big leap to think that somebody of a lesser financial stature would be willing to pay a human trafficker for a sex slave.
Well, I think what Congressman Bridenstine is, the point he's trying to make is once they get the young girls here, and then America, you know, our government takes them in and sends them to these supposed relatives, we're completing a human trafficking deal. Our government is completing a human trafficking deal. That is just so off base.
Well, and it's immoral on every level.
Right.
You know, but unfortunately, look at who we've got in the White House right now. The word morals is probably something they find on Scrabble, and that's about
as close
as they
ever get
to it.
Well, no, I know I'm racist for thinking the way I do, but then if you're going to call, you know, if that administration's just going to keep calling us racist, Obama, Eric Holder, Nancy Pelosi, you know, they're calling me racist.
I think they've beat that
my
horse
opinion.
To the... I think they beat that horse to death, and everybody's recognized it. I mean, the fact that we've got groups of people in cities like Chicago who happen to have a darker hue of skin than mine, who are now standing up to the Obama administration and saying that they've been sold out and they don't, you know, they don't believe in them anymore. The fact that that is happening with groups of people in this country that once were ardent supporters of them, especially, it was this border surge that I think was the final straw that woke them up, because 35 million people in this country, that that come from south of the Rio Grande that makes the other minorities in this country, that makes them very, very irrelevant. And they have finally started waking up to the fact that their votes will no longer, they'll be a marginalized segment of society. And unfortunately, because of, there were people like Margaret Sanger that founded Planned Parenthood. That was part of what they wanted to do. They wanted to, Margaret Sanger's objective behind founding Planned Parenthood was to exterminate blacks, period. That was her goal. And now they see that, now they've aborted 30 million children since Roe versus Wade. And, combine that, 30 million, amazing how that's very close to the numbers of illegal aliens we have in here in the country today. They realize that they have been intentionally marginalized over decades, and now with this massive influx of illegal aliens, they're looking at becoming an extremely politically unimportant group of people in the country, and they're very upset about it, and they should be, because it's not an accident to what's happened to them.
Well, Robert, thanks for having me, and I will look for that link and everything, and I will definitely share it once you get it up and going, and I hope it gets up and going. I hope you do have your live show Saturday, and if you do, I will, like I said, I will share that link. James, I will be up on the overpass in Glenpool. I've got a pretty good group going, and there's about at least 20 bikers that are going to Lawton. So,
well, that's outstanding. I know those guys. Like I said, Sherry and Donald and the other gentleman. I'm not sure if I've ever heard his name, to be honest. But I know they will just be tickled pink to have some company down there.
Okay, and I probably am going to try to contact Sherry James just to let you know, because I would like for her to talk to my husband about the area and familiarize before they get there. So.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. I mean, you might as well go ahead and tell them. It might encourage them to bring some more people out.
Okay.
Yeah, Holly, and if you get that together, Holly, just give a call into the show. We'll. What James is going to do is he's going to call in, and there'll be some folks there where he's at, and he's going to, pass the phone around, so to speak, or the mic around, so to speak, and have folks give their thoughts. And, if you're there with other folks, they're more than welcome to come onto the show and give their thoughts as well. And if I can logistically make it to do the live show down there, then I'll be doing the same.
You know, Robert, I thought I might throw in something real quick. You're going to be doing a live broadcast of people on a very heated subject. You might want to throw some disclaimers out that there is possible that there could be some adult language used, because you've got people that are extraordinarily upset that you're going to be interviewing. It could happen.
Well, what I'll probably do is
I'll probably just
give them a little... a little instruction before they go on the line that, yes, it is a family show, so, we'll keep it a low key.
Yeah, that just crossed my mind because, this is a, we've actually had...
I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, we've actually had a group of people called the Latino Rebels that got a hold of the link for the master list, and I don't know how much influence they have, but I went to their website, and they're none too pleased with what we're about to pull off here. And we'll put that politely, because they weren't that polite.
Well,
no problem. Well, if we have any
things
to come up, give
them.
James,
that's them, and we're
problems.
Us. And James, you can just let your people know. So I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, whenever you talk to, I'll let the people down there in Lawton know too. If you could give Sherry the number, for the show while you're talking to her. That'd be great. I've been very swamped, you know, trying to get this, you know, the last minute details put together. So if you could give her the number for Robert's show, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, just give him the call. Yeah, just give him the call and number, 347-945-7428.
Who is that for?
For whatever,
give
that Sherry for all the people down in Lawton.
Oh, give Sherry Roberts' number?
Yeah.
Yeah,
give the call-in number.
Okay. All righty. Well, I think I'm going to get off here for the evening. Again, thanks for having me, and as always, great job, Robert. Keep it up. You too, James.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling into the show, and we'll and I may be working on a show for either this Friday or next. We'll see. What I'd like to do is try to expand how many nights I do the show. We'll have to see. I got some other things in the works that have to come through first before I could do that. But if so, what I really like to do, especially with us getting to the middle of 2014, of course, supposed to be soon be talking about 2016, as I was doing, I've got a couple pilot episodes of what I called Newt News Fridays, in which I'd really like to be able to step that up and be able to do that on a more regular basis. Perhaps I'll be able to do one this Friday, if not, perhaps next, or I still have some other things I have to find out about before I can get that going. So I'll keep you posted on that if that's something you'd still be interested in.
Okay, sounds great.
Great. Yeah, and that's definitely to promote, Newt Gingrich running again in 2016.
Absolutely. So,
well, thank you very much,
Holly,
for coming to the show. And as you know, you're always welcome to stay and chime in. So we'll look forward to hearing you again.
I've got other things going on. I just wanted to ask those questions, and I'm glad I had the opportunity. And you give us lots of opportunities, Robert. We really appreciate you.
Oh, you're welcome. I appreciate you guys as well, and we will see you on Saturday.
Okay, yeah, I'll be doing the Tulsa kind of area, so I might call in. I know the number.
Okay.
But, all right, God bless, Holly. I'm getting off of here.
Just pass up the number.
All right.
All right, good night, Holly.
All right, good night, everybody. Bye.
Thank you. Yeah, if we can get a bunch together, I think it could be a very, very exciting show. We can get different groups from all around to call in, I think that would be phenomenal. And what I'll do is I'll set it up lengthwise. It's just a normal length show, and we'll see how it goes. It may go a full 3 hours. It may just go 1 hour. We'll just have to see how things go.
Well, maybe what we can do is we can coordinate it with where you call first. And or at least, you know, to some level, you know, say you start up in Glenpool first, and then you could move down to Oklahoma City, and then you could move down to Lawton. That way, you know, we could give everybody, you know, like an 11-12-1 type thing and cover all 3 hours.
Sure.
That way.
Yeah, it sounds great. I know I'm going to be looking, if I could get the logistics to work, I have, you know, of course, I'd need be able to see if I have any access to internet access so I can get on the online portion of the show. The call-in portion won't be an issue. It'll be the whether I can get, some kind of technical stuff. So we'll be outside. There'll be no internet connection, but I may have some electronics that has cellular capabilities that will allow me to get on the internet, even though I'm not connected to the internet or have any place to connect to the internet with any kind of Wi-Fi or anything of that nature. So I'll see what can work on that technically, logistically.
Now, I know I figured out finally after many tries and failing how to hook up a hotspot on my iPhone. I don't like my iPhone, I'm not going to lie, but at least it does have some usefulness. It's too small. They need to make them big like Galaxy Notes.
Right. I could set my phone up as a hotspot, but I don't know if I can use it as a mic and a hotspot at the same time. I'll have to see on that. But we'll work out. If I have to do it out from the studio, inside studio, then unfortunately that's what I have to do. But we'll see how it goes.
Well, it sounds like we've got some sort of game plan going. Sounds like we've got some sort of game plan. I hate to cut things short, Robert, but I am in the 11th hour right now with
getting this
organized. And so I'm going to go ahead and go for the night, too. I still have to get our Facebook page set up and everything for tomorrow. And I know that I'm going to have a dozen private messages on Facebook waiting for people with questions just as soon as I get off of here. I was mind blown when CNN called today. And I'm doing Pete Santelli's show tomorrow, which is the second time I've been on there. Of course, he's got a big audience, and we've just got to get the word spread out. So I mean, I've got my work cut out for me, and I have to get up early to be able to do his show. So I am going to bid you adieu for the night, and I will talk to you again on Saturday.
Certainly, I'll talk to you then. I got to get the link into things together myself, which I'll probably be ending the show in a little bit shortly also, because I have some things I need to prepare for Saturday as well. And plus, as I did mention, I'm, told my family, we're having family vacation. And so I'm trying to be able to, go about that application as well, because as you heard, I don't do that very often. So we're going to go ahead and work on that as well. Plus, I do have some day job work that I have to get ready for tomorrow either, which much to my daughter's chagrin, you're going to work some on your vacation? I'm like, well, sometimes you got to do that. So we have that bunch of stuff and opportunity. But thank you very much, James, and I will see you on Saturday.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you then.
Talk to you then. Take care.
Tonight.
Definitely. I'll tell everyone good night. Yes, they had some technical difficulties on their phones and stuff dropped. We tried to find a way to get them in, but it wasn't clear. They weren't able to hear clearly. So looks like we dropped a couple of folks. So it is just me, your host, on the line. And as you heard, we do have a lot of things going on. Definitely check out on Facebook, Overpasses for America, and find your area where you can find a protest for the no amnesty. So definitely check that out. I know on Overpasses for America, they have a page for each state for Overpasses for America. So folks, check that out as well. Of course, a couple other things to check out is the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And also check out everything on the show on the archives, including my interview with the founder of the Patriot Journalist Network, Mark Prasik, and then also other shows we've had. Of course, definitely check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And please visit our sponsors and affiliate page. So you can check the Go Sun Stove Solar Cooking and also the Green Cycler Composter, which by Better Homes and Gardens says it makes it easy on your friends and yourself and is a great gift for a tabletop composter. And it fits comfortably on your counter there. And we also have videos of these two products on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. So please check that out and also contact me on the contact page as well. And so what I'll do tonight is, since we have our guests and our panelists who have moved on to all the different duties that they need to do, I am going to do so myself. So definitely check those things out, folks. And I will end tonight, as I do every night on the show. And that is by the song from Aubrey Ashburn. And you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. And thank you very much, everyone, for coming to the show. And please share the link with everyone, whether you share it on Twitter or Facebook, or you could email it to folks as well so they can hear these shows and share them as well and definitely get this out, because Bart's Logic is the grassroots We the People show. So take care. Definitely see us on Saturday. Check out us here on Blog Talk Radio for the perhaps we are able to get on Friday for our News Friday. Check that out. Maybe we'll be able to do an episode on that as well, but we'll definitely be on Saturday. We look forward to hearing from you, and definitely call in. And as you hear, once you're on the show, you can remain on the show, unlike other talk shows, and be a part of our roundtable discussion. So good night, folks, and please stay and listen to the song by Aubrey Ashburn, where you can hear more of her music by going to www.aubreyashburn.com. Good night, folks, and take care.